sure that everybody knows who's in the room, who was on phone.
Hey, Rick.
All right, I have 6:30 on my phone, so we will call this meeting to order. The first, again, reminder, this meeting is being recorded. We have folks in both areas who will do after a roll call to make sure everybody knows who is who and where. The first order would be the Pledge of Allegiance for those that can stand and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Please be seated. Finance Officer, take the roll.
Birch, here. Beach,
here.
Lutens, here. Mueller, here.
We have 4 present, 0 absent, so we have a quorum. This regular meeting is now in session. So for those in the room, we have Kelly, the librarian, as I would call her, is here. The Van Horts, Bob and Mary, are in the room. Online, we have Don Irish as public, Carol Hagen, and Sherman Lakota. Additionally, Brian Meyer and David Fellmeyer from DGR, who will be briefing for the airport CIP. And City Attorney Bo Barrett is joining us online via phone as well. So the first item will be the approval of the agenda. We do have one minor change that we want to do. Item number 11D, which is the hire summer employees. We will request that we move that behind executive session just to make sure we can, if there's any questions we need to answer there, we can.
So you're saying that we're going to go to an executive session and then?
Then we'll do that to summer hires. That way, if there's any personal questions, we can answer them there before voting on.
I make a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
Second.
McCain has made the motion. Steve has seconded to approve the agenda as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. So the agenda is passed. I'm going to take a temporary pause here and go to the side just a little bit since we have folks here in the room. As you can see, we're still under some degree of construction. So the bathrooms do work. The males only has one toilet. The females has 2 toilets and a sink. So if we need to use them, they are available. Same as they were before, so it should be fine. For those that are online, Will Paulson has joined in the room. Okay, so next item is the approval of the minutes for March 2nd regular meeting and the March 16/17 BOE meeting.
Make a motion to approve the meetings of the March 2nd, 2026 regular meeting, and then March 16th and 17th, 2026 BOE meeting.
As presented?
Presented.
Okay. Your second?
I'll second.
Is there any further questions or discussion on those? Hearing none, Steve's made the motion. Cheryl has seconded to accept the minutes of the March 2nd, 2026 regular meeting and March 16/17, 2026 BOE meeting as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. And that motion passes. Next up is the approval of claims.
You'll see that I had put an amended claims list with only the addition of mileage reimbursement for Garrett. So it's the one addition.
Who is Two Trees Technologies?
That's who does like our internet and program services.
It used to be called Connecting Point, and then they were bought out, so they do all of our IT services and stuff.
Stuffed way over my head. Sorry about that, but.
I make a motion to approve the claims.
I'll second.
So Cheryl made the motion to accept the claims as presented, seconded by Larry. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. And that passes. Sir, that just joined the room, can you state who you are? We have people online, please.
Yeah, who is online?
Online, we have Don Irish, Carol Hagen, Sherman Lakota, Brian Meyer, David Fellmeyer, and Bo Barrett. And they were announced prior to getting here.
Yeah.
Sir, your name? When were you living? I'm sorry. Next item up is the finance officer's report.
I'll make the motion to approve the finance report.
I'll second.
So Steve's made the motion, Caitlin seconded, to accept the finance officer's report as presented. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. And that passes. Next item up are donations. There are two donations, a $900 donation from Zachary Tyke Johnson Legacy Scholarship to the Ambulance Department for current EMT students, and a $3,000 donation from the Bargain Shop to the Ambulance Department.
Can we do both of them under the same thing?
Yes.
I'm going to make a motion to accept the both donations. One, $900 from the Zachary Ty Johnson Legacy Scholarship to the Ambulance for the EMT student. And the second one, $3,000 from the Bargain Shop to the Ambulance.
Next second.
I'll second.
So Steve's made motion to accept the donations as presented. Larry has seconded. Is there any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
Those opposed, nay. And one abstain. So that motion passes and the donations are accepted. Next up, our public comments for us members of the public that are in the room or online. Public comments are a time for persons to address the City Council on items not listed on the agenda. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item of the agenda unless the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action will be taken. Each person has up to 3 minutes to speak. Comments made during public appearance period of the agenda may be on any subject that's not on the agenda. There shall be no personal attacks against mayor, members of the city council, city staff, or any other individual. At this time, if there's any members of the public that would like to make a comment, if you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're online, please let you know. If we have a crossover, we'll get a priority so everybody has a chance. Time is limited to 3 minutes. Is there anyone that would like to make a comment at this time?
My name is William F. Paulson. I lifelong local, sent you guys some emails. So I just want you to know we're past the point of qualified immunity. If you stop me from exercising my First Amendment privilege this evening, I've sent you all and your lawyers my demands about you no longer preventing the First Amendment privilege up here during public comment, claiming no personal attacks for everything you don't want to hear is chicken shit. You are all cowards. I can't stand carpetbaggers. You people that come here and get on this council and fuck with lifelong locals such as myself. Individually, some of you claim you don't see eye to eye with this creepy little dictator with the hammer, yet you go along with anything he desires. You are trash leaders. Larry, you are just another fucking rubber stamp for him, just like I figured you would be. Cheryl, you're a huge disappointment too. If Linda Mirkbaum and Linda Kelly were still alive, they would be ashamed of your blind loyalty to this, your blind loyalty to this little fucker. Then we got Squeaky Steve, who's just a happy to be a part of something. You are dumb as hell. It's laughable sitting here watching these fuckers explain shit to you. Caitlin, I can see why your husband left you. Then we got Scott Boy, the guy who had a problem with my property, but lets his parents' hazardous and nuisance property harm others. That place is a fucking dump, and it's comparable to my Ritchie Park, which is why I took photos of it last September. You are a fucking disgrace, Scott, a little control freak. If these Dutchmen in this town weren't such cowards, you would still be hanging out at home and nobody would really know who you are. Even now, being a mayor, nobody really knows who you are. That's all right. I have set a standard for you, losers. Bo, you are a fucking trash attorney, too. There's a storm coming. I told you, if you were going to follow him off a cliff, I don't want to hear any crying about it later. All you gutless fucking council members had to do was stand up to that little prick. But you are cowards, so fuck every one of you. I'll tell you something you're going to understand. Hey, thanks for actually letting me talk. It's too bad we had to threaten you with litigation and take away your guys' qualified immunity to get to this point. But that's how I feel about you guys. What I can cram in 3 minutes anyways. You guys are absolute fucking trash. I can't stand your guys' leadership. You guys go along with whatever the fuck he wants. And I think it's awesome that I get to sit here and exercise my First Amendment privilege. But it's too fucking late, buddy. I'm going to sue you for the other shit. If you want to fucking cut me off in the future, I'll just keep adding, and I'll amend those fucking suits and send it to the judge. So fuck every one of you. All right, we're done. Have a happy Easter.
Thanks, Will.
The fucking bread is so just like a top.
All right, anybody else in the room or online would like to have any discussion?
Yes, this is Carol Hagan.
You bet, Carol.
I live at 712 Lakeview Circle Drive here in Springfield, and I just want to express my support for our council and those that choose to serve. There's a lot of things that you represent many people, many different views in this community. We may not all agree on things. There are things I don't agree on. But I appreciate the work that the council does. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Carol. Anyone else in the room that would like to make public comment or online?
Bob Manhort. I was just wondering if we're ever going to get this ordinance resolved. I don't know, otherwise I'm going to have to start looking somewhere else.
We won't go into an answer, but I will. Are you going to be home this weekend? I know Larry and I have talked about it, so.
Okay. Well, I won't be home Sunday.
Okay. So I don't think we'll contact you on Easter, but.
Okay. Well, we do have an answering machine.
Okay. Larry and I will be probably after this meeting and see when we have either tomorrow or hopefully maybe tomorrow if you're going to be around. And anyway, I know we have your number, so.
Okay. I appreciate that.
The city office is closed, though, so if for some reason we don't get a hold of you, that's why, so.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else that would like to make a public comment? Okay, hearing none. Thank you for all those that participated in public comment. A little lax today, but that's okay. So sometimes we need to do that. So next up is official correspondence. We have two items to go to read over, and I'll paraphrase. One of them is from the Bonhomme County Highway Department. It's to all cities in the county. It was dated March 23rd, 2026. The purpose of the letter is to give us our spring cleanup dates for the Bonhomme County Restricted Landfill. It will verify that only acceptable items are taken at the restricted landfill. The Board of Commissioners has approved the following. Restricted landfill will be open 3 days, April 22, 23, 2026, from 8 to 5 p.m., and again on April 25 from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. No fees will be charged on these 3 days. In the event of inclement weather, the alternate days will be April 29 and 30 from 8 to 5 and May 2 from 9 to 12. Any city wishing to take materials to the landfill outside of these days will be charged standard fees and loads. All loads must be scheduled through the Highway Department. City personnel can haul items to the landfill on the 3 days mentioned above. Only acceptable items will be allowed in the landfill. Loads containing unacceptable items will not be permitted. Loads must be separated. Burnables, scrap steel, concrete, et cetera, and they will go in separate areas. And to piggyback on that, the city has designated April 13th, Monday, as a city cleanup day. That's when the city employees will go down and pick that up. And same rules, they must be separated, and it must be acceptable to the landfill. If not, please take it to your normal garbage. Plastics are not permitted for sure, as they're not. The city will have for a limited time that weekend a dumpster at College Memorial Park that will be there to assist in some of those non-burnables, but it will be hauled out on Monday the 13th while the guys are collecting items. The second piece of official correspondence is the 2025 annual drinking water report. This letter is from the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources, dated March 13, 2026, to Ms. Amanda Larson, City of Springfield, sent via email. The annual water report for the City of Springfield is included. Again, I'll paraphrase. It's a time for all community water systems to issue their annual drinking water report to their customers. Each community public water system must make the drinking water report available to its individual customers by July 1, 2026 for water quality data collected during or prior to calendar year 2025. DANR has generated a drinking water report for your system. Check the information attached and ensure that it is published no later than July 1, 2026. If you determine the report is correct, you can use this report to distribute to your customers. And a Microsoft Word version of that report has been included. It is in the packet, and that will be going out in April to the various online. It's already published online, I believe you said.
It's on the website.
And it's on our website already, and then it will be going to the paper shortly for publish there. As far as the water quality report itself, this was generated, again, by Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Remembering that we are kind of going through a transition period, so this report has some of the old plant and some of the new one in it.
We're all good across the board, so no issues according to the report. They are stating that we serve more than 2,108 customers, an average of 206,000 gallons of water per day. We get our water from surface water sources. So we do pretty close. The state has performed an assessment of our source water, and they have determined that the relative susceptibility rating for the Springfield public water supply system is medium. The rest will be in the report for everyone to publish. There's narrative as well as some technical data for these items. Okay. The next item up is the mayor and departmental reports. So just a quick, again, you can see them from my perspective. The District 3 meeting was last week, generally kind of a 10, but not necessarily get a whole lot of information out of them. So it's just good to see a few other folks that are there. This year it was in Lenox at a facility there, a kind of a wedding venue place. So it was a nice evening, nothing really new. There is a handout that I have if any council members would like to see it. I think it's published on the Municipal League's website. That's just their roll-up of the legislative session and things that the Municipal League had done. And then a couple days ago, I went to the Gammons Point Dam interagency meeting over in Yankton, so that's folks from both sides of the river. Basically, right now, fishing should be good this year, according to them, because in low water years, the walleye numbers are good. So there's quite a bit of things going on in the area. So I've read from Springfield's perspective, 4th of July, our new airport, so those kind of items to everybody else. So, but it does look like it will be a low water year this year since there's not much snowpack. So, we'll go with it. The Game Fish and Parks is actively planning to do some work down at the park to include some chip seal as well as work on the bathhouse on the north side that they've tarped over. That will probably not be till, I think he said, August or September. Chip seal may be before the 4th, so I think they were going to open bids today, if I remember what Shane had said for their system-wide setting. So probably a little activity down there. First fishing tournament that I know of is August or April 26th. Big Sioux Cat out of Northwest Iowa. Okay. With that, anything to add from your perspective?
No, I think it's all on the report. Most of you have questions, so.
All right. Capital improvement projects. Water treatment plant update. First item you'll notice is that the old water treatment plant is no longer there. So it is gone, as well as the pump house is gone. Our last meeting, we discussed the fact that without a building, it's really open and really easy to drive up a cliff. So we are working on some guardrail up there, both to keep folks from going forward, but we do still have that clear well underground. Of course, where they collapsed that building into for quite some years to come will continue to settle. So obviously we don't want any driving there. The payout that you see today, $72,200, is predominantly for that demolition. There's some other dirt work being done, and they're down to just a couple of things to finish up there. So seeding will be, as potential or as possible. I would expect that might be some warranty similar to the airport. But we're getting down to the very end, and I think May or June we will call it a project, and we will close that off and move forward. So as of April, the water treatment plant has been making our water to the city, and pretty well. So guys are learning. We are learning about what it takes to run it, gathering data on new costs and old costs, and they're still planning on doing it in open house at some point in time in the future. Right now, they pulled a lot of stuff out of the old plant, so that's all kind of all over the floor of the new one. So as they sort through that, we'll get that cleaned up, and then we'll have some time for open house. But it looks good. With that, the water treatment plant does have a pay application number 34, $72,200. Is there action on that pay application? Again, that is pretty much all demolition costs.
And this should be the last payment?
No, there still will be a couple more. There's a little bit more that needs to be done this evening, stuff like that. So there will be a little bit more. We should have probably, we're on track right now to probably only have two more months, potentially, of that and then close out. So
yeah,
we still have to pay for this yet, too. So
that was part of the claims.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
But I think there's, Camden was thinking four more change orders.
And there are,
just to kind of wrap things.
The final change order will be an adjustment of all of the materials and quantities. So.
But the other things are just small things like the screens.
Yep.
So. And that should be done in, what, May, June?
Mm-hmm. That way we can finalize and close the project and move on. So.
I'll make a motion to approve FEMA pay app number 34.
$72,200.
I'll second.
Okay, so Steve made the motion to accept FEMA pay out number 34 for $72,200 as presented, and Larry has seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. That passes. Next up is old business. Back to the personnel policy manual. If you choose to discuss it, it's currently on the table, so it would be picked up from the table.
I'll make a motion to pick it up off the table.
Is there a second?
Second.
Pick. So Larry made the motion to pick up the personnel policy manual, section 3, employee classifications from the table. Steve has seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed, nay. So it is now off the table and it is open for council discussion.
Okay. I cleaned it up from like notes and discussions and what have you. So it has been amended from, I think, 3.0 down to 3.5, but we did remove the 3.5 because it didn't apply to us, or because of how many employees we had. So I cleaned up each of the pages and then sent it to you for review. So that's what you have in your packet or in front of you. And then I know the discussion before has been about, like, the part-time employee and how that looks. But just a friendly reminder that there are technically two part-time positions, one where there's a benefit eligible, and then there's the not benefit eligible, but the 3.2 and 3.3 policies. Oh, and I did throw in on the part-time employee the benefit eligible for the policy 3.2. Part-time employees can look different, so I gave two options for a 20-hour part-time employee and then a 30-hour part-time employee. So then it would the benefits would follow accordingly. So a 20-hour would get half the benefits, and then three-quarters would get I shouldn't say benefits, but the everything would be prorated on that part-time all classification.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me see if I understand this right. And I don't try not to be what you said tonight. But anyway, though, 20 hours, you get half of your benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then 30 hours, and it will be prorated. Is that
maybe like three quarters?
Or three quarters.
Yep. Okay. So say like for vacation leave, you know, typically, or like a regular employee would get 60 hours. So then a half-time employee or the 20-hour one would get 30. And then the three-quarter or the 30-hour would get the
45. And that's per what? Per year?
Or it's on a yearly basis. Sick leave is done each month. So you get your increment at each month.
Oh, now I'm understanding it better. Trying not to be a dummy. Yes, it is. This reason why I'm like HR does it at CFC.
Well, I've made my point before, and I'm staying with it. I think part-time employees do not need benefits because how many other employers out there do this? And I think with some of the economy and some of the things that are happening right now, I think we need to pull in our purse strings a little bit. But that's just me.
And because we have the two options, you can hire as a part-time employee, not benefit eligible, or so you have the choice of each time, you know, with each situation.
I just think this 3.2, I just, that's my personal belief.
Well, anyway, that's fair. Because I happen to be not a full-time employee at CFC. There's seasonal and then there's marginal. The marginal, which I have to work, or that they want me to work, about 30 hours per week, okay? But for the benefits, I don't get paid like for tomorrow, like a full-time employee does. And when it comes to like vacation time, I only get half of what a full-time employee gets. So
I've never had a part-time job where I got any benefit.
Well,
but I know that's 50 years ago too.
But so. Then, you know, it really isn't a part-time job because, you know, even though it's supposed to be 30 hours for me. Yeah, right. That's right. A whole heck of a lot more. But I still, no matter how many hours that I work a week, I still is entitled to half of, you know, for vacation time. Anything else, no, it goes out the window. And so
I think one of the things to remember about this is that we don't have that many city employees, but just about all of them in some capacity or another have some type of certifications and things like that that they do. So maybe normally look at, you know, seasonals or even lifeguards have certifications. So and some of those are very, very advanced and take a lot of time to get. And so it's well worth having an option, I believe, to utilize that again. It's not the only option. So
another reason I support the option of having a half-time or a part-time employee with benefits. We expect those people to show up when we have an emergency of some type of time. Normally it'd be a weather emergency, you know, so they have to be a little bit of flexibility with us. And I think that this is one way to show our appreciation, for want of a better description.
So the one with benefits is only going to pertain to somebody that?
Whoever we hire into a position that we designate that.
I think it depends how you advertise the position. Because
yeah.
You would advertise it according to one of these. You would advertise it as a full-time employee, yes, benefit eligible, or, you know, part-time, benefit eligible, part-time, non-benefit eligible, or the temporary / seasonal. So these are just the classifications that you can advertise under. or ass. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
As it is and the way it's worded, I'm satisfied with the options.
Okay. Have any other discussion or want to have action? We can either accept, deny, or table for additional.
I make a motion to approve the personnel policy as presented.
I'll second that.
So Larry's made the motion, or Caitlin's had made the motion, I'm sorry, to accept the personnel policy manual section 3, employee classification that's presented tonight. Larry has seconded. Motion's been made. Are there any further discussion, questions, or comments prior to the vote? Okay, hearing none. Those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed, nay?
Nay.
So the motion passes, section 3 votes to 1, and personnel policy section 3 will, as approved, and we will now start utilizing that for city personnel.
Thanks.
Next item, the abandoned nuisance property updates. So the first one is the Jones property. Okay. So as far as the Jones property concerns, to get us up to speed where we're at, the city offer was accepted. The property was purchased in March, so we have the deed. It has been registered at the courthouse. It is official. The city owns it. Our liability insurance does cover us. There are three parcels, three lots, one vacant, one with the old gas building with the significant issues with the roof, and then the bargain barn with the theater. So it was $1 for the purchase price, $30 to register the deed, $4,901 in back taxes. So those have all been cleared, and that property is cleared out. What we've been able to do since then, the water department's already been in and they've looked at it and come back and with a couple of items that we have to do to get started. Number one is the theater building does not have its own water shutoff. But it is connected actually to the dental clinic. So they are gathering up the materials and putting out a plan to go in and dig that up so they can put a independent water shutoff for that building. That's the first thing we'll have to do before we can do anything to make sure it gets shut off. But at the same time, they're kind of exploring where everything else goes in that alley to include the other buildings. We have talked to Greg Chelsky, who is the owner of the other part of the shared wall, so he knows where all this is at. Start exploring that. We have talked to SPN already. They're going to give us some recommendations on structural engineers to go into that building to start trying to figure out how can we do this, how can we tear down one and keep the other as much as possible. Is the other one even, Greg's got a part in this about maintaining his doing that. And of course we have the vacant lot that's next to him. So those things are already been put in motion. We're trying to work on that. We've also talked to District 3 about reaching out to potential sources to include the state grants or some other assistance and taking care of that blighted area. Tabor did it a couple years ago when they bought a building on Main Street. Some funds to help with the removal, get it cleared off and get it to a usable point where we can work, do it. We have talked to the Development Corporation as well, so they're fully aware of it and what's coming, and expectation is that they will help as we get closer to getting it done and making sure that it is, that those are returned to buildable lots and ready to go. So I think in both cases, the theater building has quite a bit of stuff in it, so that will have to all get hauled out. There's a trailer that was on the one property behind the old gas building, that's already been researched. It's, it had an old Missouri plate on it that was owned by the Jones family, so there's already work there. I know Don's already took a look at it. I think he would like to keep the trailer and get rid of the homemade camper that it was. So he's already started to figure out how to get that out of there. It's actually a fairly nice trailer that he can use for all lawnmowers and stuff like that. So start working on those things. So there's some action going. A couple things that might come with it yet. Getting a hold of the surveyor to come in, figure out exactly where lot lines are would be one aspect. Make sure we know where that property is, because over the years it's kind of blended. A little concern maybe on when the building adjacent to the gas building was torn down in 2012, there's evidence here that they did not remove the debris. They put it in the hole, which would kind of render that as not being able to be built on. So that may be something that gets included in this and pull that out so that that lot's buildable as well. Because when it's like that, you can pour concrete over it, but eventually it's just going to sag again. So that's where those stand. So we're moving along on getting rid of those.
Do we need to have any outside inspectors look for hazardous materials before we do anything?
Brownfield, or whichever way it goes. I can't remember where the S is. It's to look into it. Okay. That started anyway.
Okay, Sue?
Yep, the same ones that did the plant. We had contacted them before on this one. It was first abandoned, condemned, so to speak. And they're more than happy to come do it. They just wanted the owner's permission, and we didn't have that. So now that we're the owners, they have our permission to look at those things. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have an actual address? Off the top of your head, do you know what the address is?
For both of them. It's 808 and 812 8th Street. Okay.
So we are moving forward, and I thank Bo. He did a lot of this work and got a lot of this done with the heirs, and getting them notice and catching their attention. And I think they believe that they are clear to the properties as well. So it was kind of news to them. So now that we're done, we've got it done. We'll move on, and we are certainly taking on our part to help clean up the city as well. Okay, the next one on the list. Is there any other questions on the Jones property from the council? Yep, these things aren't fast, but we have much more control of how to deal with this. The next one, which the old Ritchie Park property owned by Paulson Clark, I swung by there today again. There's been a little bit of cleanup. The letter that was sent out in February, just to remind everybody, was not any kind of new action. That was just a reminder of existing action. Ed provided and essentially gave Paulson the fresh start with the property to towards getting it done as if it was fresh. Per our ordinances, Chapter 90, the fact that the city has had already three actions on that property over the course of about 10 years. Work that was listed included removal of water sewer utilities, demolition of the foundation and basement, removal of outbuildings and sheds, et cetera, and obtain all necessary permits for work performed for razzing. The work must have been commenced within 60 days, so this letter was dated 2 February, and completed within 90 days unless application for an extension of time is approved by the council. And I think we kind of discussed this earlier, given the time frame it was on. You know, it was a little unusual spring, so that won't be held against them. A little bit has been done. The pickup's been moved. There has been some trees and some brush clearing. There was a big brush pile that's been hauled out. So there's a little bit, enough that I would probably say that it has commenced within the 60 days. Whether it'll be completed in the 90 is another story. Razzing permits, of course, are approved by the council. We have not received anything yet. So whether that comes in by the next meeting or not, we shall see. And I do know there's action that has to be done on the trailer house through the state since it's registered somewhere in DMV. We have all the proper forms online. So, so that's where we're sitting on that. Again, I think it's commenced. Where it's going, I don't know, but we'll keep an eye on the next month, and then Bo, I'm sure, will be able to provide some additional information as far as future steps, depending upon which direction it's going. So, so that's where we're at there. Any questions on that one? Okay. And then, I know Van Orts were here. This, they weren't necessarily asking about the specific thing, the planning and zoning. Much more in general, they have resubmitted a building permit with a little bit of an update. Larry wants to see anything. I know Larry's been doing some research with the assessor's office. There was a little bit of action in front of the legislature this year that did get approved. I don't quite understand what they did, but I do understand the part in state law that says for owner-occupied properties, and this is where the 50% comes from for a house or a barn dominium. If 50% or more of the building is assessed as being living space, I think is the term they use, then the entire thing is living, is owner-occupied. It's the building, it's a house, and that's and the basis for the 50%. Go out to a building or chalice, something like that, which is work. If it's not 50%, then only that sub portion is approved. That's why, you know, as our definition, it's zoned residential. Residential is a house, so if you have 50% of it and the whole thing is assessed as a house, the whole property, then that's where our acceptance of doing it. So that could be a chalice, that could be the garage over or the apartment over the garage is. It really doesn't matter. It kind of falls into that category. So that's in general where we're at. We probably don't entirely need that in our ordinance since it's referring to state law. So the parts that were in the proposed ordinance involves having a certain amount of square footage on the first floor. Some of those things right now, those are, you know, pretty gray areas. So a good building permit that could come in, but we could report. And I know Larry's working with the assessor.
Well, to bring everybody up to the same speed, I met with the assessor's office. I did a phone call yesterday and went back today for a face-to-face because my confusion was growing on telephone. The biggest thing I came out of it, other than the fact that the way they measure living space and the way we need to consider living space are similar but also quite different. They look at living space for taxation purposes. And we look at living space for a definition of where you're living at in the building, which is they're similar but different. Things came out today, and some of it's in the new draft ordinance. A house that has an attached garage is considered a residence, but the garage is not living space. So it's in their calculations, it changes. And I think we need to have a sincere discussion how we're going to approach that for our ordinance. How do we want to look at that to make valid decisions? The next item was the definition of living space as opposed to residence. You know, residence is the entire building, where living space within the building could be different. Using the attached garage as an example, if it has finished walls, and that's part of the definition of a living space, your floors, walls have to be finished, ceiling has to be finished, you have to have the necessary amenities, shower, bathroom, bedroom, kitchen, and the accoutrements that go with them.
basement only comes into play in the living space if it meets the finishing requirements. If you have a ceiling, if you have walls, if you have floor coverings, that is where an impact comes in. Using the garage as an unusual example, let's say one of the people living in the house, if it's a two-person household, and goes into the garage and sets up a recliner in his work area or her work area with a television on the wall and turns it into the man cave or the she shed, whatever you want to call it, then it kind of gets looked at from the assessor's point of view as possibly living space. So it gets looked at and assessed a little bit different. Another wrinkle that we need to spend a little bit of time talking about, but not a lot. So those are bits and pieces of details that we all need to start working on. Every time I pull up my notes on the draft ordinance, I'll spend a couple hours a day writing until I get a headache and put it down, walk away, and 2 days later come back and look at my notes and ask myself, what have I done? Because I'm getting, I'm taking away the freedoms of the household by saying, you shall, you will, you know, and there are accepted places for it, but not the way I was going at it. So I would throw away my notes and start over. That's why I haven't presented any new notes.
I have a just a statement. I'm in the process of having my house assessed for fair market value. They came to look, and the gym, if you've been in my house, can't be considered living space. So we're like, we're going to have to consider it a garage space because it's not livable, even though it's finished. The part above the garage that's a loft has a bathroom, toilet, shower. That's considered livable footage. The garage
it's
kind of in a similar aspect as the barndominium shop, whatever, because it's complete, it's finished, it's got a flooring, it's got a roof, the walls are done, but it's not a livable, can't be deemed a livable space.
Yeah,
it's confusing.
Trying to understand it gives you headaches, and unless you actively work in that world, you know, there's a lot of it that even if you're around it for a while, just doesn't plain make any common sense. Not at the first glance.
Well, let me ask you this, Larry. If I wanted to finish my garage, then would that be a livable space or not?
It's going to be a dependable situation. If you finished out the inside of your garage just by putting paneling on the wall, ideally, from the assessor's point of view, you're going to take out a building permit, and we would end up communicating that when the project is done with the county, and they'll come back and look at your home, at the work you've done for an improvement, and decide if you should pay more taxes on it.
But then you don't have to take a building permit if you're not extending the premises where you built on your...
Agreed. But by the same token, how else does the county know that you've made...
That's their job to go out there. So every year you get that letter that tells you to go out and did you do it?
Again, that's one of the things, you know, any community can do it, and a lot do. We don't. The county doesn't do it even on its own. So one of the things that came up when there's one particular bill that went through and it got approved, and and I understand both sides of it. You know, it had to do with limiting what a municipality could do for building permits. And there were two big portions to it. And our senator was in that committee, so we talked about it a little bit beforehand. One portion of it had a lot to do with utilities and wiring and some of those things, and you know, limiting being able to do that. And I reminded him that, like, things like water meters and stuff, we have in those, and we don't want to lose the ability, even though we don't, if we ever need to regulate that, because that means somebody could come in, plumb themselves around our, you know, our water meter or something, and that's, you know, and there's electrical things as well. The other portion of it was like shingling and siding and windows, and there are a lot of places, I think Yankton does it, you know. We don't. Well, I guess you can go either way. Now they won't be able to do for some of those things. There was a lot of concern about storm chasers and stuff like that coming in, but for general, it was there. Even if we did, we don't have the ability. And that was one of the things, you know, if you don't have the ability to enforce it, then how far are you going to go? And so, you know, if you want to shingle, you want to do whatever, it's really between you and the insurance company at that point. So as long as whatever is done, it's that. We've always been on the portion that unless you can do a lot of home remodeling, unless you add on square footage, you know, we don't need a building permit because that's the assessment space. And so,
do you need a building permit to put an egress in then?
No, you shouldn't, because you're not adding
no, square
space
feet
to the structure.
Right.
So do you need a building permit to replace a deck then?
Yes.
No.
No.
Not if it's already existing.
Yeah, there. Right. But if you make it larger.
Okay.
If you make it larger, because that is assessed.
Right.
So, okay. Things like sheds, you know, garden sheds, and I know there was a draft, there's an ordinance that was presented, you know, probably a year ago now that the county commission didn't act on. They got into, you know, how big do we need to get before you get a building permit? Because even though sheds, something as small as like a 10 by 10 garden shed can be assessed, you know, ridiculously small, it's like pennies. So,
well, when I moved my shed in, if I remember right, I ended up having to get a building permit.
Yeah. There's never anything wrong with getting it. We just normally, until you get to, at least the way I look at it, until you get to the size of like a one-car garage, you know, you probably could do it. Now, you guys may have different opinions of that, I guess, but
anyway, to ask you another question on it then, because I'm thinking seriously about finishing my garage.
Okay.
So that means the walls and the ceilings, and that also means electrical, you know, for the fans and therefore the electrical outlets and stuff like that. Now, when I get it, if I ever get it done, then I would, if I understand you right, that I'm going to have the assessors come in and assess it.
They usually send you a letter every spring and ask you if you have done any improvements to your property. And then that's when you send it back, and then they'll come out and assess.
Oh, okay.
That's another one of the gray areas that got discussed today when I was at the auditor's or the assessor's office. There's a fine line between maintenance and improvements. You know, replacing a deck. Basic maintenance, you know, you got to make it safe. But if you're changing the aesthetics of the desk drastically, then possibly it should be considered an improvement. You know, you could what if it 14 different ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
If you go back in history, and there's a big tie for property taxes, if you go back in history, there wasn't a whole lot of home do-it-yourself stuff, right? You went to the lumber yard, maybe you got, you know, maybe you did a little bit on your own. Now with all the Menards and the Home Depots and the Lowe's of the world, you know, you can do a lot to your own house. The problem that comes in, and folks understand this for property taxes as well, when you go and do that, like Larry said, if those things are assessed, you know, and increases your property taxes, well, when over time these things are done to unimproved houses, and then the assessor goes through it, and okay, well, this one got, you know, this garage got enclosed, and they're doing all this, and all of a sudden, you know, the property taxes go up. But those are some of the reasons why, or contribute to a reason why they can go up quite a bit for everybody, is because, you know, everybody went and did all these home improvements, and then when the time came, they went around and,
yeah,
put stuff up. It's not, you know, it's not the reason, but it's a
raising
factor. Mayor, may I interject briefly for a moment?
Yes. Yep, go ahead, Bob.
Thank you very much. So, Larry, I appreciate the research and sitting with the assessor and from a county standpoint, you know, tying, you know, having the assessor in on, you know, the planning and zoning at the county level is much more tied to taxation and things like assessment. But, you know, if you're talking city zoning, the comparison between city zoning and county assessment is like, you know, sandwich bread and tortillas. Now, I can put a ham and cheese on a tortilla and eat it and love it, but I'm not going to call it a taco. So they're absolutely different things. Okay. So from the city's standpoint, when you're looking at planning and zoning, you're looking at things like future use of the property. And you know, in the law, the law looks to use property for quote the highest and best use. So that's why we have things like zoning and, you know, single family residential areas, because you don't want to plop down industrial, you know, chemical manufacturing facility right next to, you know, your four bedroom, brand new homes. Okay. So when you're looking for the highest and best use, we're looking to do things like one, zoning, which is creating areas that are intended for specific uses. And so you can segregate some of those, you know, industrial and commercial uses from areas where people would want to live. And then you're also looking at things like planning, which is, okay, so if you know, if a developer comes in and wants to turn this big empty field into housing developments, then they need to follow certain procedures and go through and have building permits and streets that look a particular way and curbs and things like that, because the city wants to make sure that anything that's done in the future is in line with the city's plan. So from the county perspective, yeah, having someone get a building permit for a new building ties directly in with their taxation. Not only is it for those purposes of planning and zoning at the county level, but it's also for taxation and how they make their money. So that makes a lot of sense for them. But for the city, the taxation aspects of it make much, much less sense. And it's really a how do we regulate what these buildings look like to a certain extent, mm-hmm. and what use the buildings have, and how do we keep things like, you know, 10 parking lots next to each other from flooding the street, the city's infrastructure. That's part of planning. So when you look at the planning and zoning ordinance, look at it from those eyes. And you know, I'd hate to see too many comparisons to how the county assesses things. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
That's good. There are those differences, and it's certainly good to understand how the county is going to look at it, because we meet as a board of equalization once a year. Obviously, those things come up there too, and not everybody understands it. And I thought you just kind of touched on an example that I bring up too, that worries, because a part of this is the second and third order effects, things like stormwater drainage, you know, that we're about to start putting up sheds and garages, even if they're small. And you throw down gravel on your property, you pour concrete on your property for a parking lot, that takes away drainage and that adds it to our stormwater system. So, you know, over time, you take away enough of that, and what the curb and gutter or the evacuation system was designed for, now it can't handle. And again, years ago, probably not a concern because there wasn't a whole lot. Yeah, maybe somebody would add a one-stall garage for a big garden farm. Well, now it's
toys got bigger, even the toys sitting there will do that. So.
This is Carol Hagen. May I address the council?
Yes, go ahead, Carol.
As a homeowner, I think with what Bo said, as a homeowner and what I've invested in my property, I want to be in a housing area. I do not expect or want some huge, big building put up next to me. That devalues my property, my view, my living conditions, and everything. And that's what I depend upon the governing body to put appropriate zoning regulations in place. Thank you.
Thanks. So you have some of those items as well. But I will add to Carol's thing, the value of a home or a piece of property is calculated probably three ways. The assessor does one. You know, they're probably the one we all know because it's that time of year anyway to pay the taxes. There's what a real estate agent or somebody might come in and say, hey, I think you can get this for your house. And then there's, you know, ultimately what somebody will open up their wallet and pay for it, or what a bank will give them to pay for it. So it's really three different things. So those are, I mean, we normally don't consider the cost, except on the building permit side where you're supposed to list your estimated cost, not only of what you're building, but also include the cost of the labor and everything that went into it. You know, ultimately it might be $600,000 that you put on there for a new house, knowing that, you know, the house will only be worth $300,000 when you got done. It was all the, everything else that went with it, with the concrete work on it. So, sometimes folks don't understand that either. They just think, well, I just went and I bought this for, you know, it cost me $80,000, but it's, you're buying a permit to do all of that. So, and the demo permit on the flip side is what the county needs to be able to take something off of the tax rolls. If you don't get a demo permit from the city to remove a building, they really don't like to take it off of the tax rolls either, because you need to have proof that you were permitted to do so within the zoning. So,
if I remember right, when I took real estate when I was in college, that as long as you can put up a building, as long as it does not hinder your site. So in other words, I'm supposed to be able to see Larry. And if you put a building up to where I can't see it, that's against real estate. And then also, if you did it, then you have to ask permission.
And some of that we probably use as the basis of setbacks and some of that kind of stuff. So. Well, good discussion. We know Larry's been doing a lot of research. Dan Orts, they're kind of the one that's driving some of this, but we still have a lot of other things. You know, we did four houses this last fall. The fourth one is going up now. So we're pretty successful. We got folks going on and got things going on in town. It's staying on top of.
Where do they want to put property things from, Bill?
On the corner of 14th and College Street, so way all the way to the end of the prison. It's across from the prison, so.
Where that leveled out here.
Yeah.
That was where Doug McGee bought.
For a while, and he had bought it from Bob Colgan. And I think before that, it looked like just a lot of internal family transfers, but. I know there's you know, pieces on both sides. Van Orts have brought in, and others have, you know, we want to, why don't you want us to build? Because, you know, it's property tax. Well, you know, the city doesn't necessarily yield too much from property tax. And as Bo said, there's things that we, you know, need and want to be able to do in the future. There's a pretty long history of doing that. Mobile homes, things like that have been regulated for a long time. So that all goes into, you know, you just don't want to sign off on something because it adds to the property tax base, because that's, except the city side, we don't get all that much money in it. So, I mean, it's a thing. It certainly is a thing for school districts and stuff, but not necessarily. Ours is in the planning. With that, since we're not voting on anything, I'll put out the word again. that we need a folks to step up for a planning and zoning commission. So to help guide through this and go into the five-year plan and beyond. So if you know somebody out there, let's please try to get them together and get it going. That is the one committee that is in our charter that we should, that we really need to have and people on it. So.
And before you can make any zoning ordinance updates, you need to have a hearing with the planning and zoning committee prior.
So I know there's folks out there that would be very good, and they don't need to know construction, and they don't need to know all these things. They just need to be concerned, and you know, the more diverse, probably the better. Some different perspectives on how to do that, because we can always find them help for building permits, stuff like that. It's the rest of the stuff that goes into it. So.
And about how many people are you?
There are five.
We need five, or there's five on the committee, but we currently have two.
Here and I would expect as we get folks in, we'll need those couple there. Probably have one emeritus that would be more than willing to help on some building things, but so that would help us move along, because we're making decisions here, and sometimes folks aren't going to be happy with it, but we've obviously got to do things. We can't stop, yeah. So it would be much better if we get another group that can.
Can you maybe write up a letter that if we know somebody, we could give it to them for the
company? I think we could probably do that, yes.
Because I have a neighbor that might be able
to. Okay. Yeah, we can pull right out of the charter and what that committee does.
And I think I know somebody that may be helpful in that too.
Okay, good. All right, anything else on that portion of it? I know there's still a little bit more, and I know Van Orts are not going to get the answer that they probably want, but hopefully they understand that when we are working on it, we would certainly like to see them do something, but it is residential, so we're going to have to figure out how to make that a house. And again, it's both set too. It's not just for them for tomorrow. You know, 10 years from now, you know, that thing.
So can we, just out of curiosity, because I know we don't want to have it cover the whole property, the whole property line, but can we look at the aesthetics of it too?
That's actually a portion of it
has to be grass or whatever.
Well, there are setbacks, and within the setbacks, it also states front yards.
Yep.
You have to be, which is a little different. So some of that's already within there.
And if you live on a corner box.
Yeah. And how much impervious surface you're going to lay, concrete walkways and stuff like that, you know, that's all included in what you're looking at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that affects the runoff and then who's downstream.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of times, yeah, hey, I just want to do this, but you're going to impact your neighbor, you know, two blocks down, which is why you can't just,
Does that mean that if you have a bad neighbor, you can run all the water down that way?
No comment.
That doesn't work.
It's okay. That's a very good discussion. So again, thanks, Larry, for doing the research and Bo. And I mean, there's still work to be done, obviously. So again, if you know some folks, let's see if we can get that committee stood up. The next item that's up for our discussion is the police pickup. I know Larry's been working on that too, so I will let him take that over.
Well, we know that the transmission is bad in the pickup and needs to be replaced. I'm going to use that as a starting point. We've been quoted roughly $14,000 to replace the transmission. That's all the vehicle is worth as it sits. I hesitate to recommend putting that much repair into a vehicle because it's not going to change in value. I would much rather endorse taking the repair money and pushing it toward a replacement vehicle. If we get a new one, that would figure out to be somewhere between probably 15 to 18% of the purchase price of a new vehicle. You know, if we would make the repairs and continue with getting a new vehicle somewhere in the future, we just lost, for all practical purposes, that 12 to 15%.
The next reason I would endorse looking at the new truck, there's more problems with it than just the transmission. Last Friday night, I believe it was, Eric came home from school, and he got a call somewhere during the night. He went over and tried to use the police pickup, and it wouldn't start. Scott's been checking it. It's been working fine. We need a dependable vehicle. That coupled with, you know, and the fact that a dependable vehicle is needed, it's also his office. You know, that's where he does 99% of his business. So we've got to give him the tools to do his job the best of our ability. Now, that's why I would recommend babying this one along and order a new or replacement vehicle. I did some checking with state contracts. There are two contract vendors that have pickups on the state contract. Base price is in that $45,000 to $48,000 range. There are other amenities that need to be looked at that are add-ons. I tried calling the dealer for Ford, and unfortunately he's on vacation somewhere nice, and I won't be able to contact him until Monday. The basic questions I was looking at to ask him were what kind of warranty comes with a replacement vehicle. Do we have options in that warranty plan? The other item was, once the order's placed, what kind of a window are we looking at for delivery? Another kind of important thing to know. And mostly for personal interest, I was curious to see what model year it would be sold as. You know, 24, 25, 26, 27, you know, just so we have a basic description. Now, I recognize that our vehicle, our current police vehicle only has roughly 90,000 miles on it, which isn't bad for a 7-year-old truck. But how many engine hours are also included? Because there's a little bit more idling time in that vehicle than the ones we need. And so, and while it's sitting there idling, the gears and pumps in the transmission are working, so that probably contributed somewhat to the transmission issues. So that's my, that's what I'm advocating for is.
Did, I guess I have a question. Did we get a second opinion ever? A second?
We actually have two for the cancellations. We have two different areas, two different calls and reports we couldn't.
I think that I'm going to speak on behalf of the community. There's a very upset community member, and we need to respectfully probably go to the local community person as well, because it's been brought to my attention that he's not very pleased that we did not ask them to look at it.
Well, I will speak to that. I will understand that. Calls is a local business, and we utilize them.
No, not just in general.
Which we did. So when the vehicle has had a number of repairs there, I mean, we do get around.
They just said that they never got anything regarding the transmission. Yeah. And so he was very upset.
But we do get our vehicles around to all of those businesses for everything from tires to oil changes to, I will add, just to give the specifics, 87,425 miles, 10,627. Total engine hours, 6,735 engine idle hours as of March 21st. When I snagged a picture of the dash.
And the last time that I had talked to Jerry, he was saying that he had contacted somebody, I think, in Des Moines
I have that information. I understand what he did, but that's a little bit more involved than what he was letting you understand. That was buying a basic pickup, and then that company would outfit it to our needs. We were buying the base pickup. We can do that without following state bid if the pickup frame and chassis or a body, whatever you want to call it, is under $50,000. So he got that quote. Everything else, it turns it into a police vehicle, a pursuit package. Everything else was all add-ons. The state contract has all of that already included.
Okay.
So what the information he was getting, it was good information. I was pleased he took the initiative to get it. But until I started digging into some of the details, I'm not as impressed as I originally started out looking in that particular option.
Okay.
Maybe you guys already said this and I missed it, but it might be beneficial to contact Mark Max.
We get information from the sheriff's office. They provided information on their vehicles, as well as some other law enforcement agencies too. So we've gotten quite a bit from different ones, and we know for instance exactly how much Avon paid for theirs last year. So we've got baselines, yeah, what they get and what they recommend. And, so yeah, we're not doing this on our own.
I'm not disagreeing with anything Larry said. I agree 100% with what you're saying. I just have a few questions. One of them, do you think we could get $14,000 worth of value back as using that pickup as a backup? And I guess coming from a financial background, my other concern is the budget. If we're going to be budgeting $80,000, who's going to lose $80,000? Because I know when I was a manager and I had a budget, if the warden needed money from another area, came to me and said, I'm going to take $100,000 out of your account because I need to put it over here. So are we going to have to take $80,000 out of the streets or water plant or another area to help finance that truck right now?
I was going to have that done prior to the meeting, and I have not.
But you didn't know I was going to ask the question.
No, we know you're going to ask the question. So we've already started looking into this, figured out. And first off, Avon's pickup was about $63,000. That was from zero. So we have a little bit since we've already had granted for radios and gears and stuff like that. So that's a pretty good. Pardon?
And decals and everything.
100%. Their new pickup went from 0 to 100%.
And that was a year ago or 2 years ago?
A year ago.
Okay.
So that's a good baseline to do. The state bid is about the same all the way around as it was last year. So, the ancillaries. So we're in that neighborhood. We're not in the 80,000. But still, it's a pretty substantial piece. And yeah, what are we going to get back on the old one? So.
But, and then my question is, as we know, you can buy a new vehicle. You can get a lemon again or whatever. If we did the $14,000 and wait till we can order a new one, we always have that backup in case something happens with the new one. It has to go in, needs oil changes, and we've got a backup. I guess that's where I'm wondering if we can get $14,000 use out of that vehicle and get it fixed. Or if we need a backup for another department, if it can be used. Because we do have other vehicles that are going to have to be replaced down the road.
So from my perspective, I will say no. There's no way we can get. We spent way too much money probably this year. And I don't think we want to pay insurance and keep that vehicle going. It's out of warranty. It's got electrical issues. That's was the other thing that's been tracked.
So you don't think $14,000,
I don't think we'd want to keep it and keep what's becoming now a money pit. essentially. And then why pass it off to somebody else that we're going to still keep paying money on? So right now the other vehicles are working good. So I would not see spending. Now we're talking, now we are talking $80,000 for a new one versus, you know, getting rid of it and moving on and having, risking, you know, just because we buy a new transmission, the, you know, if it's a 7-year-old pickup, 7-8-year-old pickup, it's generally designed to be driven pretty hard, which is probably why some of this is happening, because now that we got Garrett behind the wheel again, and he's doing it, so.
Yeah. And it would also be less cost-effective. Even if we kept this as a backup vehicle, that increases some other costs that hit the communications equipment that we would transfer.
Right.
Something we have to buy.
I was just wondering if it could go to another department, too. That's kind of where I was kind of.
Yeah, I think if we're in a different position and the pickup was just kind of getting towards the end of its natural life and as a police vehicle, and so when we're talking about you know, major repairs in multiple different areas, it's probably not. I don't see it as worthy as trying to keep it in there so long as for somebody else to take on a burden. It's not that we're too far out of doing it. We're just probably a little ahead of what we probably would have liked. That'd be fun, you know, in the future for the city. That particular vehicle, we should probably always buy while it's under warranty, assuming the warranty is 6 years.
That was going to be my next recommendation. Use whatever warranty information we can find about it and use that for our planning and rotation. When the warranty starts wearing out on it, let's get rid of, you know, trade it off, and even if it's working good, plan on trading it off at the end of its warranty life. But that's for a future vehicle some years down the road.
I think there should be a maintenance log for all vehicles. I know what you're talking about. And that needs to be maintained by each department. Because I think some of this that we're talking about now, if we can, we have a record then. This is what's happened, because it's not fair to the finance officer. They have to go back and look up 10 years of whatever.
Sure.
So this way, it's on the department. No, I'm trying to make your job easier.
In this particular case, we don't need to do that, because in the last 2 years, last 3 years, there's been two accidents. There's been a new set of tires. There's been alignments. There's been at least 4 times in the last, well, since Garrett started, for electrical issues. And now we've got at least two on the transmission. And that's outside of whatever normal maintenance that he would have done anyway. That's just in the last 2 or 3 years. So, and of course, it all, you know, when we bought the city pickup, when I was visiting with them up at the garage too, you know, on the powertrain and everything, of course, we're out of warranty now. So we're on our own. And there was two wrecks, so you know we've had that as well. So there's other underlying things that could have other things coming. So budget wise, we've got some options. So before we start stealing too much money from anybody, so we've got some options there. We also haven't explored entirely what we can reuse from this vehicle. You go to the same brand of. Again, we know the radios and the mirrors, so we're saving money there, but to go across. So, but it's not a decision point for tonight. It's for information, but it's also we're probably getting pretty close to needing to make a decision. So,
when does the state bids come out?
January.
Oh, it's not the end of the year? Do you have
the one that I have with date of January, so, with a couple of amendments since then.
I was going to say, we sent them out. I'd have to look back. I can probably reset.
I just wondered if they came out maybe like towards the end, because that's when you're doing your budgets. So
actually the state doesn't work that way.
Right.
Yeah. The state doesn't work that way, because we had originally kind of thought about that with the city, with Don's pickup.
Yeah.
And when I went to go do that in September-ish, it was easier to for us to just buy a straight one up anyway, and we got it cheaper. But every time Joe went to look something up, you know, the couple of models that were kind of close, they were sold out because the state bid only allows for a certain number. Well, by the time you get to the end of the year, they're now police vehicles maybe are a little different, but nonetheless, which there are a different category altogether to do that. So because most folks, municipalities and counties budget so that when January starts, you start buying stuff because you have a budget. So
if I'm not mistaken, the police vehicles contract was last September.
Yeah, something like that. So it's something there.
What last September?
Was the state letting for that particular
category. Okay.
Right, it was last September.
So, when we're talking two to 6 month lead time, it says on there probably.
Yeah, this particular company is delivery of anywhere from 60 to 240 days.
So, again, perspective wise, it's I think, probably by next meeting we'll need to make some kind of decision. Larry's already been in there. Anybody that wants to go see this vehicle, take a look at it, get a hold of Amanda or myself, and then get in there and go take a look at it. We'll walk around it at some point so you can see where it is. Dried on anyway. For sure. So, and there's like Larry saying, I'll make a phone call in the future here and kind of develop it off of this.
Yeah, if there's anything else that is of interest to you, let me know. And if I haven't already thought of it, I can at least add it to the list of asking for whatever.
I think you've done a great job.
Yes, thank you.
And then on the other side of the table over here, yeah, we appreciate this. Look at the budget and see what it shakes out and where it comes. But being a little out of cycle, but I think we have options to really impact somebody else. So it's not at this point. You never know. Larry might take a phone call on Monday and I get told you want it, you better get a call. But we Derek's doing great, and he's getting out there, and like you said, that's his prime mover. That's what he needs to do his job. So, just like we're putting money away for a payloader, but this one's sneaking up on us.
So have you talked to him about how he's doing in school, or?
I haven't specifically. I know Larry's visited with him, so.
He's doing well. He's loving it. And tomorrow is his first major test of the cycle. So before we sat down tonight, I gave him a text to hope you do well.
Yeah. And he said he's learning a lot. When...
Yes. And he's also able to network. There's a student from Wagner and another one from the Yankton Sheriff's Office, I think it is, in his class. So he's doing some local networking and understanding people and just making the right contacts.
Great.
Okay. Let's keep moving on. And I know Brian and Dave, thanks for hanging in there with us. We talked a little zoning. We didn't talk airport zoning, so we will set that aside for now, but that's a whole other thing that we have to deal with here. So. But with that, if you guys are still there and haven't gone to sleep yet,
no, we're here.
Next item, first one under new business is the airport capital infrastructure plan that goes in front of the FAA annually. I will let Brian kind of explain the timeline or a little out of sequence or how that works and go through it. We do this every year, so we're just in a little different time frame. So, Brian, take over, please.
Sure. Thanks. And thanks for letting us join virtually tonight. So, yeah, what you have in front of you is your annual airport capital improvement plan. You're required to do that, approve it every year. As you recall, normally we bring this to you in the fall, but because of the new FAA cycle, they want it done earlier. So the new way is we'll be doing these in the spring for the following year. So big lead time on that. But I assume you have a copy of the draft capital improvement plan we submitted. It is the same as what you submitted last year, with the exception of your first project last year was shown as a 2028 AWOS, which is an automated weather observation system that was perceived to be the highest priority next project for the use of your funds. And having live weather on the field does, it's very important for airport users, but especially if you talk to people like air ambulance, absolutely critical for them. It gives them live on the field weather. So at any rate, your project was a 2028 construction of this weather system. What this year's CIP shows is breaking that into two pieces so that you can start the design a year earlier, which you need to do, and get a grant for it a year earlier so that you don't have to pay for something that you don't have a grant for yet. In other words, you can get your grant a year earlier. So that one changed. The 28 project was just split into, the design of it was split out into 27. You have the grant funding set aside to do that, but we're doing this in advance. So I believe you have a resolution in front of you. The resolution would adopt the capital improvement plan, certify you'd come up with a local match if you ever get a grant for that, and just authorizes the submittal of various grant-related documents to keep the wheels turning on this. So I guess with that said, David, can you think of anything I missed, sir?
There were some COVID funds, if you remember that, 22 to 26. Those funds are now set to expire in 28. So having another project set up to use those funds was kind of the intent of having another project.
So with that said, I guess unless you had any questions, we're bringing this to you for your consideration and approval by resolution.
And then so the first question I have, so when we talk the timeline, we're doing it now in May, then in 27 we'll be back to September-ish, or will this always now be kind of late spring?
Yeah, it's looking like the new normal, that spring will be the time to do the, it'll come back to you annually again next year about this time, yeah.
That's something we need to know for budget purposes.
Nice.
So, yeah. So this is good. So again, the action, this is annual, goes to the FAA. So you can take a look at the proposed projects. If you have any questions on the AWOS, it's an AWOS. There's a bit of a push, I guess, I think statewide to get those because of what they do support. So, and they're not overly expensive when you look at potential costs.
Yeah, they are an expensive item, but of course the funding you get is the 90% federal, 5% state. Your local share ends up being 5% of that equipment. So,
And this is a 15-year plan, so it's nice to be able to look out to the future. We're probably more concerned about the year. So, any other questions, and then we'll look for action on the. The infrastructure plan, and then I have one other question and see if Brian can update us on. So, but any action on the plan?
Yeah, I've got a question, though. If I remember right, you said something about the electrical out there. Did you say, like, you went to one of the hangars and then it stopped?
They don't know if one of the if there ever was electricity to some of those hangars. Did they ever find out?
I don't think we ever found out. And we talked to Ron, who was a part of that crew when they first, because the hangars have been moved since that warning went in, that World War II surplus stuff that Doc Lindemann got, and then hangars were moved and realigned. So there's been some a couple things thrown out that after the project last year, hangars don't have electricity. They probably didn't have it to begin with. Because you can't trace the wire and even move. So there's no indication that they necessarily even had it to begin with.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
We know the ones that the wire got cut. They pulled us right away. They got their electricity back and nobody else said anything. Okay. They own a hangar that doesn't have power. And I think by this point in time, everybody's been out to theirs, minus maybe Ole Olson.
Because you know who asked me about this.
So. But again, same thing. It's been, we put it out then to anybody that owns a hangar, if they don't have something that they had before construction, it's not been formally brought to the city.
No, and I have all of hangar agreements besides one signed and nobody's said anything. Yeah. So. I would have thought that before they signed the agreements, they would have said something.
Yeah.
So in other words, they're hate to use their SOL.
Well, no, they're not, because
something they didn't have in the first.
Okay. So the airport capital improvement plan resolution 2026-01 is the formal name for this. This would be the adoption of the approved FY 2027 Airport Capital Improvement Plan that would certify that local match would be available if an airport grant is awarded for something that we pursue, and that this is authorized to submit for proposed projects for federal and state grants as indicated. And that the resolution that authorizes the submittal of this FY 2027 SIP from Springfield for possible state and aviation grants, state and federal aviation grants. And it authorizes the mayor and or city administrator to sign and submit required documentations to execute any potential grants or agreements.
I'll make the motion to approve the airport capital infrastructure plan resolution 2026-01 as presented.
Your second? I will. Okay. So Steve made the motion, Larry seconded, to accept the airport capital and infrastructure plan resolution number 2026-01 is presented. Any other discussions or questions of either us here or Brian or David on that? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. So that passes, and we'll get that signed so they can move that up because it's due next month. And then, Brian, while you're on, and David, just a little update on the follow-up from last year's runway. I know seating is out there under warranty. Anything else that we need to be looking forward to this year as far as warranty walkthroughs, any of that kind of stuff? Do you have any information?
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, like you said, Mayor, the seating is under warranty. It did not take last year. With spring immersion here, we will be getting with the contractor and watching that grow. And they are aware of any reseating that will need to be done. I guess we'll play it week by week here when the weather gets nice to keep an eye on that and meet the contractor out there. Other than that, we don't have any current warranty items, although we will conduct another warranty walkthrough probably later this summer, just before the warranty expires. Is that's all I had, unless there are any other questions?
Nope, that's all we need to know, so I guess so. Well, I'm sure you'll let Don know or let the office know if we have it. I don't know if it's the same outfit that would potentially be doing the water plant, but I suppose there's always an opportunity. So, okay. So we'll look forward to that. We got a little moisture now, but I don't think it's going to be enough to see much of anything. So. Okay. Any other questions? Well, we got Brian and Dave on the line. Otherwise, we'll let them go and we'll move on. Look here. Get away. So. All right. Thank you, Brian. Thanks, Dave, for joining and giving us that update. And Wonderful. We will have this to you tomorrow.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good Easter.
Okay. Item number B under new business is the workman's comp coverage. This is the annual update for covering all of those workers or volunteers that we do in the city. You can see the various boards, the folks that are there, as well as the volunteer fire department that is covered under this workman's compensation.
We're actually considered, you are, but you are considered before.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't pay into your payroll. So when I had the workman's comp audit the beginning of the month, this was something that came out of it rather than, you know, kind of doing the blanket. It was, you requested that we list them all out so that there was no question. So hence why there's this. You will see that there are two, like the City Planning Commission and the Fair Housing Board, where there's the three yellow lines. I made those yellow because those are the ones that need committee members yet. The other ones are either like at what they are supposed to be or maybe be room, but that's why those are yellow.
What is Forward Springfield?
So that was a committee that was there when I started. It was under a different name, but it had some folks on there. The intention is to try to work with Development Corporation and a couple of other entities. So it's actually kind of wide open. If you know anybody else that would like to work it, that's much more of the future-looking thing. But Development Corporation and other entities that want to take time there. The previous one that was there was Development Corporation and some other folks that were on it that don't have their own. Okay, any questions on the workman's comp and who gets it and why? So we pay, that's part of our portion for the Springfield Fire Department is to pay. So, and then this covers there. So if there aren't any other questions, then we will, is there action to accept that? Let's deny it. All right, go ahead.
I make a motion to approve the workman's compensation coverage.
I'll second.
Okay, so we'll say reading the whole thing, but Cheryl's made the motion, Larry seconded to accept the presented workman's compensation coverage list through SDML Workers' Compensation Fund. Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion passes. Okay, next item up, we're moving summer employees to the end, so we can discuss that. And I think, does that take us to
the
recreation trail? The recreation. Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, the pool thing, though. Okay. So the recreational trail program, this is the agreement with SP and Helms. Just as a reminder, last year we received a grant to rehab our current walking trail, the Delightful Prospects Trail. So we need to do that this year, and so this is a contract with SPN to do the engineering work that can help us get that done so that we don't lose that grant opportunity. We have the submission is to rehab essentially what we have, so some portions may be torn out, replaced. Couple of park benches, a new sign, so all those things were part. So this just continues to move the process along.
I make a motion to approve the recreational trail project, program engineer contract as presented.
I'll second.
Team on made the motion to accept the recreational trail program engineer contract as presented. Larry seconded. Any additional questions or discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those approved, nay. So that passes. And then before we do executive session, we have the swimming pool handbook, policy manual, and I can touch on that briefly. It's got a couple updates from previous years. I think she's got handouts.
So basically, the update is to make it follow all of the rest so that, you know, if there's one policy that needs to come out or be revised, then you don't have to do the whole handbook. Just made it a little bit easier to read, has all the same information as before. Like I said, just kind of cleaned it up a bit. You do have, I believe, four that were handed out tonight, which replaces, or not replaces, but in addition to what is in the packet itself. So that was section 1.3, where that was talking about the roles and responsibilities. And the item that I added was addressing the private swimming lessons, just making sure that we have like a verified list from the manager identifying the instructor and the participants, and then making sure that we have the liability waivers done prior. And then something that had come up last year was swimming lessons requiring a facility use fee. So what I added was, instead of putting like an actual number in there, I just said that this fee is 50% of the daily admission rate. So depending on how long the swim lessons are, typically it's 10 days, then it would just be 50% of the daily rate, which currently is $5. So
we don't have anything on our goods and services. Should that be included there?
It does go up to that because the daily rate is on the cost of goods and services. That's why I put the 50% so that we're not having to change a dollar amount in here all the time.
So I guess I'm kind of wondering if also when we have pool rentals, should they have something too? Because right now, under 1.4, we have pool rentals, and it's just the general admission fee applies to each person. But should we charge something for renting that the pool, too? Because you could have one, guard for 10 kids, and that's $50, and you can have one guard for 5 kids, it's $25. Or should there be just a set fee to use that pool for a party? Well, I guess I was wondering, too, about insurance.
Do we really rent the pool out for parties?
Has it been done prior? Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Years ago, a long time ago, it was.
I didn't know that was even an option, so.
I'm talking years ago.
She's picking on us.
Well, our kids would have been invited.
Oh, okay.
So if you rent the pool out during pool hours, then is the pool closed to the public?
I would assume this would be after.
This is.
After it's closed, like at 8 o'clock.
Yes, other hours, because it says that lifeguard wages will be unlimited, so they get basically overtimes for additional. So it would be outside the pool or the set pool hours.
After 8 p.m.
Or before.
Or before.
Before. So more than likely probably a morning.
I just was curious because you added this here and I thought maybe something should be added here with the pool rental.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you think it's appropriate.
Add it to the cost of goods and services.
Very low.
Well, if it's listed in there, it's good for years or not. Just like this building, this room, which is probably something. Somebody will come back.
Does the pool have outdoor lights?
Sorry, I was making a note. So then there's 1.3, and then on 1.4, I added the definition for family passes because it's always asked on who constitutes family and its immediate family, just outlining that so that it's in there. And then I also put in the facility use people, like the swim lessons, just so that it's in two places, especially since it's listed. The other update that I gave you, I believe, was 120.
Yes, the designated public information officer.
Yep, just adding under the serious incident management, just adding that the mayor or the designated public information officer. So that was the only thing added to that. And then on 1.15 was just adding the mayor to the chain of command and just outlining that the county council member is the designated. So those were the only changes that I presented or like made for tonight in addition to what was.
Is that owner of the park and rec people?
What's that?
The pool holders of the park and rec.
Yes.
I would make a motion to approve with the added comments that you're going to add. Or do you want
to? As my amended one.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll second it.
So Cheryl's made the motion to accept the swimming pool handbook as amended. Steve has seconded. Any other discussion or questions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. That passed. Now I can answer your question. If you would like to rent it, you could on the 4th of July after 4 p.m. Because we only are open 12 to 4 on the 4th of July.
My busiest day of the year.
And I don't know if you get lifeguards.
I don't know if you
get lifeguards. Oh, I never thought about that.
Well, I don't know. For time and a half, I bet you can scrape together three.
I don't know about that. No.
That's true. A lot of them are going to be drunk. Okay. With that, we're back to where we were, which was we have summer employee discussion for executive session. That's it's just discussion for personnel at this point. So, and public safety, but an update on that. So I do have a request then to go to executive session for personnel and public safety.
I'll make
a motion to go.
Okay. Your second?
Second.
So Kim has made the motion, Steve has seconded for executive sessions. Time now is 8:26. We are in executive session. Go. This is a personnel thing, so. You're still on? He's not on it.